God damn, I need IPA.
This is Beering Ain't Easy, your podcast for beer humor, dad humor, and beer tastings from Texas and beyond. So crack one if you got one and turn it up. Welcome to Beering Ain't Easy, Season 2, Episode 37 with Ryan and Drew. Hello, all our loyal listeners. We have got a fun episode planned today that we've been talking about for a while. And the time was ticking on this one because the shelf life of one particular beer was running pretty close to the end here. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are drinking the old school Fat Tire recipe, the OG, which has been recently converted to a completely different beer. So today we're going to drink them side by side. And Ryan, I have to admit that I just went on a complete internet binge on sustainable brewing. So that may be a little side topic that we're going to have to cover today. How do you feel? How do you feel about this episode?
I'm interested to see the difference. I haven't had, I mean, old school Fat Tire in a while, but I definitely haven't had the new recipe at all. So I'll be curious to see. I don't want to call you out just right off the top, but it's not a completely new beer. Apparently it's the exact same, or not the exact same, but it's the same malts that they use. They probably just scaled it back a little bit. And they claim that lovers of the old recipe will still find those same notes in the new one. They just made it lighter and crisper.
See, I don't know if I buy that. That's why we need to do an episode, because I've heard a lot of people say that it's not an amber anymore. It's a golden ale. So I don't know, you know, maybe it's the same malts, but I've heard it's a completely different beer. And it was really hard for me not to drink this. I actually served some to my father-in-law when he was visiting, because I knew it was a lighter beer now. And I didn't have the normal Mick Ultras that he drinks. So he enjoyed it. But I was like, man, I'm trying to save it just for this episode, because the listeners need to know our first takes on this.
Well, if he enjoyed it, then it's definitely not still an amber.
That is very true.
So, Drew, I guess I got to ask, what's your history with Fat Tire in general?
I mean, we've talked a lot, it seems like, in the last episodes we've had about, you know, how we got into craft beer and the beers we remember from when it all started. And so I really think of Fat Tire as one of those OG beers that I got into before I got into IPAs. So I was drinking a lot of Shiner Bock back in those days, drinking some Fat Tire, getting into those kind of maltier, you know, good malt backbone beers. And so I was a fan. I don't think I liked it as much as Shiner, but gateway beer into craft for me. How about you?
Same, I agree. It's just, yeah, it's one of those that's just like, it's easy drinking. It's definitely got like way more like flavor than, you know, being the college kid drinking the domestics. But, I mean, it's been around for 30 years. It's like the perfect gateway, like you said, into craft beer. So yeah, I drank a lot of them pretty early on, became a hophead pretty quick. And like we were talking about, I'm excited to revisit it, see what it's like.
Yeah, I don't remember, you know, once we moved into some good local beers, I don't remember wanting to come back to it. We were supposed to have Adam on the podcast because this used to be his go-to favorite beer. So we miss you, Adam. And if he decides to call in and taste the two beers that I delivered him when he came and visited, then we'll patch it in and make it sound completely awkward later in this episode.
As is our MO.
Yeah. So I'm going to give a little bit of the background of Fat Tire here. So it was first created in 1991, and it was pretty much the flagship of New Belgian up until I think I read like almost like 2016. Like it was one of their go-to beers as a company. 2016 was their peak, and since then their sales, or their volume, sorry, has dropped by 52% since 2016. And so in 2016, they were 43% of the volume of all New Belgian beers. And now, or last year, they were only 13%. So New Belgian has gone all in on the Voodoo Ranger brand, which is
doing fantastic. And Fat Tire's kind of been dwindling. So it there's a reason why they did a big rebrand and a restructure. And I don't think we've really talked about what that restructure is. So, Ryan, you want to tell the listeners what they're trying to pitch with this new beer?
I thought you were talking about when you said the rebrand. I thought you were talking about the company as a whole. And I was like, do you mean selling? Selling out?
Yeah, selling to Kieran in 2019.
Yeah.
That too.
Sorry. Yeah, the beer. Say, not to just directly call out the elephant in the room here, but yeah, so one of the things they've always been a proponent of and have been pushing for a long time, but what they're especially trying to get out there front and center with the new Fat Tire Ale is trying to be a carbon neutral company and just like low environmental impacts. Fat Tire itself is carbon neutral. You looked into this more than I did. Do they consider their entire brewery carbon neutral?
No. They have targets to be completely carbon neutral by 2030.
I wonder how they differentiate this particular beer versus the overall brewery. That'd be interesting to see how they kind of dice that up.
Yeah, that's the rabbit hole I got in. I was like, okay, the engineer in me wants to know how the hell a beer is carbon neutral. And so like that's where I got in the rabbit hole. So we'll save that once we get a few more of this beer in me so I can get into the conspiracy theories. But
yeah, let's take a complete left turn from our normal podcast format. Just get real technical tonight.
Yeah. Yes. It's interesting. It's very interesting. And I, for one, was surprised that the original recipe is already certified carbon neutral, and they have been since 2020. So this isn't new, but the rebrand for the new recipe is new. So I think now they're, you know, this was like before it was just this tiny little thing in the top corner of the label that says it's certified carbon neutral. And now if you look at the new bottle, which the old bottle, I know we don't have it on video, you know, has the iconic bicycle on there. It's got a, you know, blue and red label. The new label is white with still a little bit of the red and blue on there. They've got the bicycle, but it's right front and center. It's high quality, low impact, alternatively powered, help protect the, you know, the planet. So they're going all in with a sustainability angle, although it was, you know, quote unquote sustainable beforehand. And so I'm thinking that drop in sales and the drop in market share here had something to do with the recipe change too, though.
not to just say we see through the bullshit, but yeah, I mean, Amber Ales isn't the most popular style, and with everything going towards, yeah, crispy boys and IPAs and stuff, it makes sense that they revamp the recipe to kind of get more towards that market, but also use the opportunity to kind of push this whole sustainability thing, which is a popular, you know, thing. If they can catch more attention with that, obviously it'll help.
Did you know that they had made a recipe change in the past? I didn't realize that.
No. When was that?
You know, I mentioned 2016 was their peak. And then a year later, they started seeing a decline. And so they started adding live yeast to their beer to try to make it fresher. And so that was a recipe change. And at that time, they also rebranded it a Belgian style ale. It was the same, more or less the same recipe, but instead of calling it amber, they called it a Belgian style, I guess, to try to get out of that, you know, no one's buying ambers anymore. But then they reversed that in 2019 and they're like, no, we're back to an amber ale again. So they've been playing around with this for a while. And I think they finally just like, man, we got to go bold this time.
So it sounds like they had a little bit of an identity crisis with this beer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I gotta think that they have so many warm feelings on this beer because it was their first one, you know, it was 1991. Trying to change a giant like that, you know, that's gotta be really tough for the original CEOs and brewers there.
For sure. Have you ever been to the New Belgium Brewery?
No, I haven't. But when I went off on my internet search, I saw all these videos and I was like, oh, that place looks pretty badass. Have you?
I have. And it was badass. it like made me want to be like, I want to work in the beer industry. Cause yeah, at the time it was before they sold. And if you worked there for like 7 years or something like that, you got like a stake in the company. So you became like a part owner of the brewery, and just the way they had the whole thing set up, it just seemed like the best, like workplace culture and atmosphere, like you could imagine. And the setting's beautiful. The place was fun. Like at the end of the tour, you can go down like one of those like twisty slide, like tube slides.
Oh yeah.
Like if you want to. Nice. So, like, I don't know. It was just like really cool.
Oh man.
It sounds dumb, but it just like, I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like just fun.
I mean, it's interesting you say that, because when I was looking at all these videos about their sustainability journey and things like that, and I was looking at the comments, there were so many like, proud employees or former employees posting on there. So it just came across like a pretty awesome place to work. So, more power to them.
Yeah. To get a tour, you had to sign up like so far in advance, and you had to be like ready the day they released the tours. So it was actually the same weekend I was there for Great American Beer Festival. So
action,
it was a hell of a weekend. Yeah. So, what's your initial thoughts here? Have you tasted both of them?
I have tasted both of them. I think we need to like talk about the appearance and the aroma first. I was surprised that the appearance is a lot more similar than I thought it was going to be. That it's maybe a shade lighter on the new version, but it's still darker than expected. What do you think?
Yeah, the old one's definitely darker. Yeah, like if I hold them up in front of my monitors for some backlighting, it becomes a lot more apparent.
Yeah, you get a little bit of a reddish hue on the OG.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the amber one's almost like orange, and the new recipe is like kind of this golden like straw, more yellow. I'm pleasantly surprised by how sweet the old recipe is. I don't remember it being this sweet.
I don't know, Ryan. I think I'm going to need more time to sip on these. I'm fully unprepared to talk with any sort of coherency.
Right. We'll circle back and revisit that later.
While we're sipping on these, I'd like to let the listeners know, if they're still trying to find the old recipe, technically, we bought one of the oldest batches, and it's technically past the best buy date. That's why we're trying to rush this episode in sooner, but still tastes good. But if you're looking for old beer, I was able to find this pretty easily at Total Wine. So it's usually a safe bet to find older beers. So if you're still trying to find it out there, just go find your nearest Total Wine, and you may be able to do this experiment too.
Shots fired. When I was looking into this right before we started recording, I did see that they kept the same SKU number for the old recipe with the new recipe to make it easier for retailers to transition to the new one. There's nowhere that's going to be carrying both of them unless it's just old stock that hasn't been sold off yet. Like, it's straight up getting phased out for the new recipe.
It's gone, but not forgotten.
Although I did see it mentioned that, they were going to re-release the old recipe occasionally on draft only in various places. So apparently the old recipe is not gone forever.
Oh, so it's kind of like one of those. Yeah. Like when a band says that they're done for good, and they're like, yeah, this is our last tour. And then you get paid enough money like a couple years later, and they come back for, one last tour again.
The farewell tour, parentheses, we really mean it this time.
It's like the McRib. Is it really gone? I don't know. They said it's done for good, but I don't know, man.
They're just drastically reducing the supplies. Yeah.
Trying to think of Fat Tire as a hype beer is just, it's something that doesn't connect in my brain there. So a little bit of trivia for you, Ryan. This beer came out in 1991. Do you want to know what the top song of the year was for 1991?
1991. Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I was 5 years old, so I'm like, any guess I'm gonna have is just gonna be like out of the blue, wild guess.
We'll see if you even know this song.
I'm guessing. If you're about to like Rickroll me, I'm gonna be like so upset.
Oh man,
I think that was like late '80s though.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it. What is it?
Bryan Adams. Everything I do it for you.
Yeah, I know that one.
I think the top movie of 1991. Any guesses there?
I'm not a good movie trivia guy. What is it?
I wrote this down so long ago, I don't remember if it was the top movie or my favorite movie from 1991. I'll fact check that. It was Terminator 2. It was probably my favorite of 1991.
No, that might have been one of the top ones. I remember it being like an industry changing movie just because of like how good the like practical like effects were.
Okay, yeah, top domestic box office for 1991, Terminator 2 Judgment Day. Boom.
Do you have the full list up? What are some other ones that came out that year?
Yeah. Number 2, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Another great movie. That was not quite as good as Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
I was going to say, not related to Men in Tights.
Oh, shit. Number 3, Home Alone.
Hey, there we go. All right.
Number 4, yeah. Silence of the Lambs. Man, 1991 was a badass bangers. Movie year. There's some good ones.
Wow.
And then I'll round out the top 10 here. Number 5, City Slickers. Number 6, Dances with Wolves. Number 7, Sleeping with the Enemy. Number 8, The Addams Family. Number 9, Naked Gun 2.5. Those Naked Gun movies were pretty good too. Leslie Nielsen. And then number 10, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
I was into that one. I mean, I was 5 years old at that time. So yeah, I got into that one.
That was right in your
zone. Shortly after that. Yeah. Man.
Not bad.
I mean, we should do a top beers of 1991. That'd be a short list, but there'd be some good factoids in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this old beer idea. So I think you were saying that you had something you wanted to talk about today that was not related to the podcast episode.
Not related at all. But Harry Belafonte just died.
Yeah.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
But I mean, I think probably his biggest song was Deo, which I can't think of Deo and not just think of Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Both of his songs were in Beetlejuice. That's the songs I know.
So it got me thinking and I was like, man, and I was like, is there any other songs that got completely hijacked by a movie? And not like, you know, like Kenny Loggins, he wrote a bunch of songs like specifically for movies that became like hugely popular, but just songs that like were used in a movie. And then like, you can't think of that song anymore without thinking of the movie that it was used in. And the only other one that immediately popped to my head was Wake Me Up Before You Go for the Zoolander gas station. Yes. Like great gas fight scene.
We were just having an innocent gasoline fight.
So I was curious if you could think of anything off the top of your head, a song like that just like got completely stolen by a movie.
It's hard because like I can think of like just iconic songs from movies, but I don't know if they were big songs before they got in that movie or if that's what made them big. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think of one where it was big before it made it into a movie.
Yeah.
I feel like the movie Forrest Gump hijacked a lot of songs for me because there was a lot of classics in that movie. But like every time I think of Fortunate Son.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say.
I think of the scene, like it's just such a memorable scene with all like the helicopters going and shit. It's like, yeah, Vietnam, yeah. Man.
I just came across another good one. Damn, it feels good to be a gangster.
Oh God, yes. Office Space.
Yeah. I'm just going to say the movie. And I'm going to see if like you immediately think of the song. All right. Reservoir Dogs.
I got nothing.
The Steelers wheel stuck in the middle with you.
Oh.
I take it you weren't a huge Reservoir Dogs guy.
Nope. I don't think I've ever seen it before.
You're missing out, man. It's good. And then the other one, what about Wayne's World?
Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody. Hell yeah. That is a great example.
Yeah. I don't, that one, maybe not quite as much because it's just such a good song on its own. It still stands alone, but they're pretty inextricably linked.
Well, the headbanging during that one solo is like, for sure, I can't listen to Bohemian Rhapsody without simulating the headbang.
That's okay. Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
As I went down the rabbit hole with New Belgium, I was looking at a lot of their stats. I did not realize that the Voodoo Ranger Juice Force IPA was recorded, like, I guess monetarily, was recorded as the best launch ever last year of any beer.
Ever or for the year?
It said ever.
What?
Yeah. Of like from a sales standpoint. So
interesting. Huh.
I mean, they make a shitload of beer. I mean, they make a lot of volume. And so I read that and I had to read it like three times. And so hopefully I didn't get that fact wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Voodoo Ranger's good. I had some last weekend.
Yeah.
It's like one of those that's like safe and solid. You know, it's like, I need to pick up some beer for a group. I don't know what everyone's into. It's like, yeah, I can get this. I know it's going to be fun.
And it's accessible. You could visit somebody in any state and you probably are going to be able to find it. You're like, I need to know where I can find a solid IPA. And you can just go grab one of those. So yeah, I think that whole marketing campaign with the skeletons too, like it's no wonder that the big market share of New Belgium beers has moved over to that whole product line.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the topic, which I really want to talk about. And that's sustainable beer.
Yeah, you said you did a deep dive and you got down the rabbit hole here. I'm curious. I'm sure you looked into this, but what are some of the ways? How do you make a carbon neutral beer?
I'm glad you asked, Ryan. So some of the things they really brought up was the renewable energy. So for them, they've got a solar array. They've also got biogas capture at their facility, which I thought that was pretty cool. So both the solar array and the biogas was there, and that provides 46% of their facility electricity. And then the rest, it's kind of different. It's kind of like when you get your energy contract, you can choose to get renewable energy. So you're basically paying a little bit more for a solar farm, even though you may be indirectly supplied on the grid by something that's, you know, coal powered or you know, natural gas powered. So, you know, power is one way, you know, who you're choosing is your raw material suppliers. One of the other big things is zero waste. So, you know, we talked about spent grains and what do you do with all that stuff and finding a sustainable way to reuse it. Packaging is another big thing, like, you know, going lightweight on packaging, going, you know, full recyclable on their packaging, who they use as their distributors, how do they get their beer to you? And, you know, what is their carbon footprint? And last but not least, a small footprint at the very end of being carbon neutral is that you pay carbon offsets. So what I've been reading is that New Belgium's been paying like about $1.5 million a year, I think, on carbon offsets, which basically means you're putting money into carbon projects for renewable energy to offset the emissions that you can't reduce naturally.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. That makes a lot more sense because, yeah, like when you got started talking about, like their distributors and stuff, it's like, man, how do you go carbon neutral if you're factoring in distribution, like the people you get your materials from? Like, that seems like a can of worms. That seems like a nightmare. So, yeah, it makes sense that it's like do as much as you possibly can and then go the extra mile by getting these carbon offsets. I mean, hey, good on them. That's awesome.
I also like to think of the carbon offsets. I've mentioned on the podcast that I grew up Catholic. And so, you know, one of the things in the Catholic Church is, you know, you can go to confession. And so if you sin, you can go and admit those sins and you can do some penance by, you know, saying some Hail Mary prayers and some Our Fathers. And so this is like, I emitted something to the atmosphere, but here's some money to go fund some good projects. It's your penance.
the memo line for all their carbon offset checks just says Hail Mary.
Hail Mary, full of grace. I will say, like, what makes you sustainable too is like they have meticulously calculated their emissions for distribution and everything. And then not only that, they created this like carbon zero, you know, zero carbon footprint. What did you say? It was like a 26 page document that they made free for every brewery and, you know, out there. And that was pretty cool. I don't think anyone's really taken it this far.
Yeah. I glanced through that document. Yeah. They have a lot of resources that they're willing to share. They provide links to some stuff that like you can find really cheap carbon offset companies around the world outside of the US, but how much of a difference they're actually making is highly questionable. So they talk about vetting the people that you use when you're factoring all this stuff in. A random anecdote, speaking of Hail Mary, full of grace. I am not Catholic at all. And I have an embarrassing story that exposed me. So this isn't funny. I shouldn't be laughing when I start the story.
No, it's probably funny.
I went to a Catholic funeral going in blind, had no idea what it was about. And they started doing the like the rosary thing. And they said like the Hail Mary, full of grace. They did that whole thing and they kept doing it and they did it. And like the fifth time they started it over, I was like, I was like panicking. I was like, what is happening right now? Cause they do it like so many times and they just kept restarting over and over and over. And I had no idea what like the deal was.
Yeah.
And I was just like, am I in the Matrix? Like, is this my old iPod video and it's just skipping constantly?
There's a lot of beads on that rosary, man. You got to get through each one of those beads when you're like chanting repetitively. It's a little eerie as an outsider. I mean,
yeah. And in the middle of it, it's too late to like turn to the person next to you and be like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like,
hey, what the fuck, man? How long are we going to be here?
Yeah. So that was fun.
So we were talking about going, no one's gone farther than New Belgium. So there's one thing that they did that maybe went too far. I don't know. I want to pitch this one by you because I don't think you've heard of this one yet, Ryan. So in my rabbit trail here, I found a beer that they created called the Torched Earth Beer. And what they wanted to do is make a statement about climate change. So they simulated how a beer would be brewed and what it would taste like after a climate change ravaged world. So they tried to simulate like smoke tainted water. They chose different types of grains that are, that can survive in drought conditions and things like that. And they made, by all accounts, a pretty terrible beer. but they have really cool artwork on it. The person that I was watching the video, the people that were in charge of making it, they're like, you know, if beer tasted like this, I'd probably drink a lot less of it. So if their marketing person is saying that, then they're not making it to show off and win the Great American Beer Medal on this one.
I have so many questions. Was this like widely released or was this just like a publicity thing in like a small market?
The main centers, Fort Collins and Asheville, and then limited quantities online. So this was a very special release. So they didn't lose too much money off of it.
I was going to say, you're basically lighting money on fire.
Yeah.
To make your statement. Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me at all that it was very contained.
I don't get the impression that many people liked it. Someone else described it as it was the flavor experience of eating a Band-Aid. which sounds like,
well, I mean, that's purposeful. If you're trying to make a statement about climate change and you make this like crazy beer and it's actually good, like that kind of undermines your message.
Don't get any ideas, Martinez. A Band-Aid sour.
God.
But I think that brings the question when it comes to sustainability, and like everybody in every industry like has the same question. It's like, you know, I think I saw a statistic, and I got to give a shout out. I found one really great article from Good Beer Hunting about this whole thing, and it was great. I got a lot of my information from them, so I'll post that in the episode links. But I saw some numbers out there that said 43% of people feel like, you know, saving the environment is important, which seems a little low, I'll be honest. This is in the U.S. But only 30% of people say that they're going to choose their products based on their environmental impact. So if you're going to go all in on sustainability, do they care as much about the fact that you're a sustainable beer, or do they still at the end of the day care about, does it taste good? What do you think, Ryan?
I fall into the category of one of those terrible people where it's like, yeah, I hope definitely care about the environment. I want to leave the earth in a better place than we found it. But selfishly, my consumer choices don't reflect that. I'll buy whatever. It just has to taste good. I didn't realize I was here for a confessional tonight. Yeah. Speaking of Hail Marys.
Yeah. It's a theme of the episode. Where our family has this motto, it's like, if everybody does like a little bit, then it will be better. So like we pick and choose. There's certain things we're like, no, we can't meet you there. Like paper straws, man. I can't meet you on the paper straws that get soggy in your drink. Fuck those things. We bought some like stainless steel straws at our house that we can reuse, but and they're kind of weird too, because they're like hard, but they don't dissolve. So like there's certain things that I'm like, no, I can't meet you there. But there's other things where like, yeah, maybe we can spend, you know, 5% more and get something that's a little more sustainable. Meredith's way better than I am, but I'm on board with it. But there's certain things I'm like, no, I can't meet you there. You need to make a product that doesn't suck.
Paper straws are definitely that like linchpin in that argument over being sustainable. Like,
and I needed a reason to hate paper straws more. And I've mentioned on the podcast that my middle daughter has celiac disease and she can't have gluten. And come to find out, a lot of those paper straws actually contain gluten in them. And I was like, oh, well, fuck those straws. There's no way we're getting them now.
Breaking news from the Beering Ain't Easy podcast. Climate change activists are trying to kill your children.
It's a conspiracy. I, for one, like the science of trying to figure out a way to be sustainable, I'm all about it. And so I was fascinated by like what they're doing differently and how they can make a carbon neutral beer. And, you know, the offsets, it kind of, I'm not saying it cheapens it, but it's like, we haven't fully figured out technologically how to make a carbon neutral beer. So maybe one day, and the fact that they're trying is amazing. And so I'm all for it. It's technologically interesting to me.
They're doing leaps and bounds ahead of any other brewery I've ever heard.
Yeah.
I was also confused with you about like, how the hell do you make a carbon neutral beer? And the answer is you have to do carbon offsets, which makes sense. Not faulting them for it.
I think I've finally done my beer analysis. I'm ready to talk about these two beers side by side. We're going to start out by the numbers here. Both beers sitting at 5.2% ABV. But according to Beer Advocate, the old recipe is labeled as an amber. And surprisingly, the new recipe is labeled as American Blonde Ale. If you're going to, you know, bet the farm on this based on Beer Advocate, the original recipe had an 82 rating and the new recipe has an 81 rating. So pretty neck and neck. So what are your takeaways from the two beers, Ryan?
Well, I guess just first of all, I smiled when you said it was categorized as a blonde ale, because I have like a running joke with my our father-in-law, I guess, that anything that's just like a normal beer that they can't really classify into anything specific, they just call it a blonde ale. So
it's a catch-all.
Now anytime he sees a blonde ale on the menu, he's like, oh, hey, look, it's a blonde ale.
That checks out.
So I mentioned it earlier, but it's obviously it's an amber ale, so it's malty, but it's much sweeter than I seem to remember it being. like in a good way. I'm not saying it's like punching in the face, but just like when you finish drinking, you're like, man, that's got like a very nice kind of finish. I got a little bit of like breadiness in it towards the end. I didn't get a ton. It was like minimal hoppiness, like maybe a little bit of bitterness, but no like flavor. Overall, like, I don't want to say one note, but like it's very subtle and kind of that low malty sweetness all the way through. There's not a lot else there. So I can see why they would revamp it for today's market, because yeah, that new one, I got a lot of the same stuff, just like much more subdued, but you get a little bit of that malty sweetness right at the front, but it finishes like with a lot more like hop. I got some earthy hops in it towards the end, and it definitely comes across more crisp at the end. So I'm kind of surprised. It's an 81 on the new one and an 82 on the old one. I would flip those. I'd give the edge to the new one. I think it's a little bit better. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, man, I'm going to be a contrarian here. So I do agree with you. There's more malt sweetness on the original. The only thing, and like, this is why I haven't been like a huge fat tire drinker. It's a lot fuller feeling beer. Like you have one of these and you're like, man, I don't know if I can have another one of these, because it sits in your stomach. It's got a little bit of a syrupy aftertaste. So I've never gone to it. So I'm 100% on board with what you're saying on the crispiness of the new beer. The first word that I come to when I think of the new one is just boring. It's just like, it's crisp, but it's boring. It's like, I saw a quote that I thought was good. It was like, it gives a nod to the OG flavors, but that's about it. It's just like, hey, you remember this? This is what it used to taste like. And then it's, you know, it's just a crusher. So if I'm just drinking one beer, I'm going to go for the old recipe here. But I do see the value. If I'm going to have multiple beers, I'm going to go for that new recipe. So
I see your point, Drew. You got me a little shook. There's definitely more. Yeah. Like more flavor. There's more of an experience with the old one.
Yeah. It's more memorable. Like the new one. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, maybe it's Fat Tire. Maybe it's some other dime a dozen beer that I got on tap.
It's a valid point, but it's too late now. It's recorded. It's etched in stone.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with it.
We can't always agree on everything, right?
But I liked your comment that it was almost like a syrupy. That was like a great, that was exactly what I was like dancing around and couldn't really pinpoint it. Yeah. It was like a syrupy kind of finish.
And I think that's been the big detractor from like drinking that beer a lot, is just for that reason. I just feel like it's a very filling beer.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
So we're divided. So the Beer and AEC podcast is officially divided. So we definitely have to get Adam on the phone. I think we all know what Adam's going to pick between these two beers, but we have to get him on the phone for the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm. But I do got to say, it's just like what I do occasionally when we do these little experiments and get on my soapbox for a second. These classic OGs that we just don't drink anymore, just because we're off chasing the next shiny object. The ones that come off the top of my head is like, obviously Sierra Nevada Pale Ale from the old beer episode. Like,
I just like bringing that one up.
Yeah, I got to bring it up every chance I get. But no, like I didn't used to drink anymore. I was like, well, I always knew it was so good, but I just never drank it. But after that episode, like I said, I had Voodoo Ranger last weekend, but also I was buying beer for a group of five guys and I grabbed a 12 pack of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale because I was like, oh man, solid. And that box was gone before we cracked into the Voodoo Ranger. Everyone went for that one. The other one that I thought of was the Oktoberfest, where we do the Polliner Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
Every time that comes out now, ever since that episode, I make sure I have some of that in my fridge. Cause it's just like, so it's these classic, simple, I don't want to say simple, like, but you know, these classic ones that aren't anything fancy, they're just so solid. And I think the new Fat Tire has probably entered that rotation where I'll probably keep some in my fridge like all the time. And if I'm tired of like IPAs or weird stuff, like it's just a solid one to just mix it up every once in a while.
I like it. It's that evolution of the craft beer drinker. You get away from the chase. And like Asa tried to explain this a few episodes ago, you just try to drink what's the best beer available. it's really hard to follow as someone who's addicted to new releases.
I'm part of that problem. It's like, yeah, what's the new release? What's local? I'm like chasing like local new releases to a fault when I should just be like, no, like what's good?
Or what's the most environmentally conscious, right, Ryan?
Yeah, I need to work on that a little harder.
All right, I think we have covered everything we could possibly cover on these beers. And so as you heard it, you know, we're saying farewell to the old recipe for now until they come back to their farewell tour. But as Ryan said, this beer is still capable of being a good crusher to keep in the back of the beer fridge. We learned a little bit about sustainability today. And just do those few little things that you can so that we don't ruin the earth and make this torched earth beer a reality. So Ryan, you want to close this out?
So listeners, next time New Belgium comes out with their hype beer release of the OG Amber, make sure you say that Hail Mary and hope you can get your hands on some.
Nice. This has been a Beering Ain't Easy production out of Houston, Texas. Follow us on Instagram or Facebook or at our website at crossthestreamsmedia.com, where you can find our podcast and all the other great sister podcasts on our network.
Cross the Streams Media Podcast.